Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another week and another episode. And today I'm talking all about intermittent fasting in perimenopause and what the science says for women in this stage. Because one of the questions I get asked all the time is, should I be intermittent fasting? And honestly, the answer is a slightly annoying one. And the answer is, it depends. And actually, a question I had from a listener recently was, is there any difference between the two stages? So between perimenopause and postmenopause, once you've actually reached menopause and beyond, when it comes to how well fasting is tolerated or how effective it is. So we're going to be touching on that as well today. But yeah, the annoying answer is always, it depends. Because just because a woman is in a certain phase, it doesn't mean that every woman in that phase is exactly the same. We are all unique. We'll obviously share similarities when we're in a certain phase together, but we're still different people. Intermittent fasting has become very popular over the past sort of 10 years, and you'll hear it promoted as a powerful tool for weight loss, for improving metabolic health markers like glucose and insulin, for healthy aging, longevity, and even disease prevention. But there's something important that often gets left out of the conversation. Most of the research on intermittent fasting has been done on animals and men, but women's physiology is so different. And during perimenopause, our bodies can become much more sensitive to stress, to blood sugar fluctuations, to hormonal disruption, cortisol dysregulation. So today I want to walk you through what intermittent fasting actually is, what the research says, why women, particularly over 40, could need a different approach, and what I generally recommend in my practice and find most effective. And the feedback I have from clients is always a positive one. So yes, fasting can be absolutely helpful, but it needs to be done in a way that supports your hormones and your nervous system, not work against them. But really getting an understanding of what intermittent fasting actually is super important, because again, another thing I think is misunderstood is that we can be, there's other ways to fast, which we're going to look at in a minute. And actually maybe you're already doing it. So let's have a look. Intermittent fasting simply means alternating between periods of eating and periods of fasting. There's a few different versions that you might have heard about. One is the 5-2 diet, which involves eating normally 5 days a week and significantly restricting calories, usually to around 500 to 600 calories a day for the other 2 days of the week. The 2 days can be consecutive or they can be two random days in the week. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of this approach. I've never done it. I've never used it. I've never got clients to do it. It tends to create more of a dieting mindset. It essentially is. And for a lot of people, it's simply not sustainable long term. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't want to do it. And restricting calories that drastically, even for 2 days a week, can make it difficult to meet your nutritional needs. And that is the piece that I think a lot of people do miss. Then you've got time restricted eating. This one is a more realistic and sustainable approach. It's definitely something I prefer. It simply means choosing a daily eating window. So you're doing the same thing every day. It's not like the 5-2. It's 7 days a week. You're doing the same thing. You're choosing a time of the day that you're going to eat. That's your eating window. And then you've got your fasting window. But most of that fasted window is late evening and as you're asleep. So it's even easier. So for example, you've probably heard of the 16-8. That's the most popular time-restricted eating approach. That's where you fast for 16 hours, essentially overnight, and you eat within an 8-hour window. So it could be 9 to 5. So 9 to 5 is an 8-hour. We know that 8-hour workday, 9 to 5. So you could eat your 3 meals between 9 and 5. So you start at 9 a.m. and you'd finish that last meal of the day at 5 p.m. Or of course, that could be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., which is what a lot of people do. So they're waiting until 11 o'clock to eat their breakfast. But again, most of the research done on the 16-8 is in males. women's physiology, particularly in perimenopause, is going to find that pretty hard as an impact on the body and your hormonal system. So potentially exacerbating symptoms and even struggling with weight. A lot of people will think, well, 16-8 will fix it. Why am I not losing, for example, my excess belly fat? And it could be why you're not losing it, because the 16-8 is just too heavy on the body at this stage. So after the 16-8, you've got the 14-10 approach. So you just fast for 14 hours instead of 16. I really like this one. Or you've got the 12-12. I really like this one. So 12-12, you eat in a 12-hour window and you fast for 12 hours. So that's very easy. That would be maybe you have your breakfast at 8 a.m. and you finish your dinner by 8 p.m. and you fast overnight. So very, very simple. And like I said, you might already accidentally be doing this anyway. If you are, that's great. You're doing a form of fasting already. Your body will be thanking you for it. But there are people on the other end of the spectrum who are unknowingly not giving themselves enough fasting time overnight. So 12 hours of fasting is ideal. We wouldn't want to have less than that. So some women, for example, finish their dinner at, let's say, 9 o'clock, because they just have so much on the evenings. Maybe they're shuttling kids around. By the time they get home and actually sit down to eat and they finish their dinner, it's now 9 o'clock. And then these women might have their breakfast at 7 or 8. So they've only fasted for 10 hours or 11 hours. But ideally, we would want them to sort of wait till 9 a.m. But if they're up super early in the morning, like let's say they're up at 5:30 or 6, waiting until 9 a.m. to eat just to get your 12-hour fast in is putting a lot of pressure on your blood sugar system and a lot of stress, and likely not helpful for their physiology. So the 12-12 is my favorite if we can find that window of time that works for us every day. We're winning. But maybe it's even easier on a Saturday and a Sunday that you do actually fast for 14 or 13, 13 hours, 13 and a half, 14, and then you have your breakfast, because maybe you're having more of a lazier start to the day. There's where things get interesting, where we start looking specifically at women's health, is what the research is actually saying about it. So studies have definitely shown potential benefits for things like I mentioned earlier, like improving insulin sensitivity. Very helpful, very important. I've talked about that on previous episodes. It's definitely a pillar of health for us to be focusing on in perimenopause. It's shown potential benefits for supporting blood sugar regulation, for weight management, for reducing inflammation in the body, for improving cholesterol levels, and potentially supporting healthy aging. Some animal research suggests that fasting could stimulate what's known as autophagy, which is basically the body's process of cleaning up damaged or dysfunctional cells. So that's a good thing, very good for disease prevention. But human research in the area of fasting, it's still quite limited, because it's extremely difficult to study long term to see if these effects do last long term. So while the early findings are really exciting and promising, of course, we would look at this and think, wow, why would we not be doing this? But we can't say with certainty that long fasting windows like hours or the 5-2 are necessary to achieve these benefits. And what's important is that many of those metabolic benefits that we see with fasting, on insulin sensitivity, blood sugar control, weight, cholesterol, they can also be achieved, like I said, through the time-restricted eating and good blood sugar regulation. So eating plenty of protein with all of our meals, having breakfast within an hour of waking, and just having that 12 hours of eating and 12 hours of fasting. So why would we strain ourselves to go past that point or do the 5-2 if we don't necessarily need to? And the question I get asked a lot, and that we all ask, is why women may respond differently to fasting than men. And that's where things get really important to understand, because women's bodies are so much more sensitive to the energy that's available. So a woman's body is looking for energy all the time to sustain itself, whereas a man's body isn't the same in that sense. When the body senses that food intake is unpredictable, so for example, the 5-2, or it's restricted for too long, for example, waiting 16 hours before you eat breakfast, it can interpret that as a stress signal. And the response to that is that the body can start to increase stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline in place of this, because it's thinking, where is the food? So the stress hormones get released. And that's where things get confusing, because a lot of women will say, they feel really good when they're fasting. They feel alert in the morning. They feel focused. They feel energized. But what's often happening here is that the body's producing more adrenaline and cortisol to maintain blood sugar levels. So the energy that they're running on is essentially a stress response energy. They're running on adrenaline as opposed to actual stable metabolic energy from, for example, a protein-rich breakfast. And over time, relying on that stress chemistry as your energy can become really draining, particularly on the nervous system. And that's going to have impacts on typical symptoms that we might experience in perimenopause, weight, particularly around the middle, any and all, you know, mood-related symptoms, energy-related symptoms, temperature regulation symptoms. So it's not actually ideal or necessary for women to be pushing to the 16-hour mark or to be looking at 5-2. So like I say, I really like 12-12 or the 14-10 or the 13-11, somewhere in between. During perimenopause, things become even more sensitive. So hormonal fluctuations can already be affecting blood sugar, stability, sleep, stress resilience, thyroid function, energy levels, gut health, and metabolic health. And at the same time, progesterone, which has a calming effect on the nervous system, begins to decline. So you have erratic estrogen affecting all of those things I just mentioned, and then you have progesterone declining, which starts to affect the nervous system and your stress response. So women might already be feeling more wired, more anxious, more sensitive to stress, more prone to sleep disruption. And if you've listened to my previous episodes, I've done quite a few episodes specifically on the cortisol response and the nervous system. So adding long fasting windows into this environment, it can sometimes push the body into an even stronger, even bigger stress response. And when blood sugar drops too low, the body activates what's known as the fight or flight response. Like I said earlier, when it's looking for, you know, if you're going too long in the morning before you eat, the body's looking for that energy, and now it senses that there is none. And so it elicits the stress response, the fight or flight. And that's the release of adrenaline and cortisol, which push your blood sugar back up in the absence of food. If this happens repeatedly day after day, because someone is pushing that fasting window out too far, say 10, 11 o'clock, it can place extra strain on the adrenal stress response day after day and start to contribute to that familiar feeling that a lot of women describe as being tired but wired, anxious, just unable to sleep or settle, and feeling tired but wired through the day as well. And so going back to the question I had from a listener recently, is there any difference between perimenopause and postmenopause when it comes to fasting? Does it become easier or more effective, you know, later on or in one phase? And the answer is yes, potentially, but it depends. So as I just explained, you know, during perimenopause, the body's going through a lot of hormonal fluctuation. Estrogen's erratic, progesterone is declining, and the unpredictable rise and fall of estrogen can make the nervous system and blood sugar regulation much more sensitive, and that lack of progesterone as well, because progesterone is a nervous system supporting, stabilizing hormone. So during perimenopause, if nervous system and blood sugar regulation is more sensitive, then we're more prone to blood sugar dips, we're more sensitive to stress, we're more likely to feel that tired but wired feeling, like I said, and we're often not sleeping very well or optimally. And because of that, the longer fasting windows like 16 just make it more stress on the body. And this is when I often see women doing all the right things in air quotes, but actually feeling worse. You know, I'm doing everything right, but why do I feel like this? Or I'm doing everything right, why can't I lose my belly fat? I'm doing everything right, but I just can't sleep. I'm having hot flushes all the time. And this is sometimes the missing piece. And I say to these women, what time do you have your breakfast? I don't eat breakfast till 11 because I'm doing the 16-8 fasting, because that's good, right? That's what I'm supposed to be doing. And sometimes that's it. Most of the time, that's it. Not the only thing, but it can be a big needle mover. When they trust me and decide they will from tomorrow have a protein-rich breakfast within an hour of waking, so they'll do the 12-12 instead of the 16-8, they will always report back within even just a few days about how much more stable they feel, even just on the actual day that they do it. And then they don't want to not do it anymore because they feel so much better. And a lot of these women, if they did have weight issues, they start to notice, well, this is working now, and I'm just doing 12-12. And I think a lot of us, me included, we expect things to be hard to be worth it. They must be hard. For something to work, it's got to be really hard. So sometimes when I have a client who's doing 16-8 and we go to 12-12, they're like, but surely something that easy can't work. Because we've all, you know, grown up in an era where to get, you know, dieting, for example, is horrible. It's restrictive, it's boring, it's painful, it's something you have to do for a certain amount of time and it's just miserable. Or training for an event physically is hard. So to actually get people to believe that 12-12 is actually, you know, yes, and this, it's so easy though. How can it work? I'm like, trust me, just trust me. And they do trust me. And then they'll always report back saying, yeah, you're right. How can something so easy actually be really effective? And this is where it's a mindset piece where we need to realize that things don't have to be so difficult. And it doesn't mean that things will only work if they're really difficult. So that being said about perimenopause, when we move into life postmenopause, so now we've gone 12 months without having a period, we are no longer making any estrogen or progesterone from our ovaries. Now things can shift a little bit. Now your hormones are generally lower, but they're more stable. There's no more month-to-month fluctuation of estrogen. There's no more progesterone is declining. It's now at this stable low level. And for some women, it can mean that the body feels a bit more predictable and resilient again. These hormones aren't just doing crazy things all month anymore. So some women find that they tolerate slightly longer fasting windows better than they did in perimenopause. So that has been a lot of women have reported that in postmenopause itself, that they find the 16-hour window to be absolutely fine. But this is really important. Postmenopause also comes with its own considerations, because we will naturally become more prone to insulin resistance when we lose estrogen, loss of muscle mass, changes in body composition. And that's when being underfueled or delaying protein intake too long can actually work against you still. Because maintaining muscle mass and supporting our metabolic health becomes even more important in this stage when we actually don't have any estrogen left and progesterone. So rather than thinking, when can I push fasting further? You know, what stage in my life can I actually do this? I'd actually encourage you to think, what does my body need most now in this stage of life? What does my body need most in this stage of life? And for a lot of women, both in perimenopause and postmenopause, that still looks like eating within a 12-hour window, fasting for 12 hours, sometimes stretching it to 13 or 14 if it feels good, maybe at the weekend, prioritizing a protein-rich breakfast, and focusing on consistency rather than any sort of extremes that will put stress on the body. So yes, fasting tolerance can improve slightly post-menopause for some women, but more isn't necessarily better, as I said. And the goal is always to support stable energy levels, balanced blood sugar. That is the foundation. Hormone health, whether pre or post-menopause, and long-term resilience. Just because your body can tolerate something, because I hear this a lot, but it's fine, I can do it, it doesn't always mean it's what your body is thriving on. And sometimes we do need to listen a little bit deeper. So for example, I say that because I've had women in the past say, I do 16-8 and I feel fine. You know, I can go until 11 o'clock without breakfast. I'm fine. I've got lots of energy in the morning. Yeah, you know, possibly running on adrenaline. But when we dig deeper and I say, okay, so you're fine, meaning everything's fine. You don't have X, Y, Z symptom. Oh, no, I do. Oh, gosh, yeah, my energy's not good. I don't sleep very well. I can't get rid of my belly fat, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then your body isn't thriving on it. If you're feeling those symptoms, this, you know, your body is not thriving on what you're doing. So that just makes people then start to think. And I think because 16-8 has been touted as being so beneficial for health, we just think if we can do it and we can make it to 11 o'clock without, you know, falling flat on our face, then it's working. It must be fine. But yeah, it doesn't always mean that behind the scenes, your body's thriving on it. So one of the biggest shifts in my own thinking over the years has been about breakfast and why that matters so much more. Plus, so in the functional health world, there used to be a lot of encouragement around delaying breakfast. But what I've observed clinically and what a lot of women's health experts are now recognizing is that many women over 40 just do better when they eat earlier in the day, as I said. So a protein-rich breakfast within an hour of waking, that is stabilizing blood sugar. It's reducing cortisol spikes. You're not running on cortisol and adrenaline. Instead, you're actually running on genuine energy and protein. you're supporting your energy levels, you're improving your mood and concentration genuinely, and you're reducing cravings later in the day, and you're also reducing the energy slumps later in the day. So that protein-rich breakfast within an hour of waking essentially sends the body that signal that food's available and it's safe to relax. That simple shift on its own can make a huge difference for women who feel constantly tired, constantly wired, or just prone to blood sugar crashes, which you may or may not identify as blood sugar crashes, but that would basically look like energy dips throughout the day, cravings, irritability, anger, needing to eat now, 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 otherwise I'm going to kill somebody. That's what blood sugar crashes look like. So rather than these aggressive fasting windows, I will always recommend something, like I said, much simpler, the 12-hour overnight fast. So as we said earlier, finishing dinner around 7 is what it could look like, and then starting your breakfast around 7 or 8. You might think, I can't finish my dinner by 7 o'clock. Okay, so let's say you finish your dinner at 8, half 8. The earlier the better, I'll always say that as a nutritional therapist, but I also live in the real world, and not all of us, depending on our life circumstances and our lifestyle and what we've got going on in the evenings and the late afternoons, we can't all finish our dinner by 7 p.m. So let's say it's 8:30. So again, you would have your breakfast at 8:30 the next day. So that's, you know, should be pretty easy for most of us. And that 12-hour fast alone already gives the digestive system and all of your other systems a good overnight rest. Some women, like I said, naturally stretch up to 13 or occasionally 14, which can also feel great. Like I said, some weekends I accidentally kind of like sort of naturally do that anyway. But in most cases, there's really no need to push fasting to 16 hours or beyond, especially if you notice that it leaves you feeling shaky, anxious, ravenous, or exhausted. The goal is always to support your physiology and not fight against it. And even if you're not noticing those symptoms, and like I said a minute ago, you're that person who says, oh, I'm fine, I can go till 11 o'clock. It doesn't always mean that behind the scenes, it's what you thrive on. And another important piece here is that fasting is only one part of the picture. What you eat during your eating window matters enormously. So you're fasting, let's say, for 12 hours and you're eating for 12 hours. You're not going to eat constantly for 12 hours. You're eating in a 12-hour window. If someone's fasting, but then they're eating highly processed foods or meals that are low in protein, low in fiber, low in nutrients, then the metabolic benefits are going to be limited. It's not just about eating and not eating, eating or not eating. It's what, when you do eat, what are you eating? So what works best is focusing on 3 balanced meals that are rich in protein, healthy fats, a good couple of different healthy fat sources, like half an avocado and some olive oil, and fiber-rich carbohydrates and plenty of colourful vegetables or salad stuff. That supports stable blood sugar and helps the body to feel safe and nourished. If you need a snack or sort of mini protein meal between, let's say, lunch and dinner, I certainly do some days, because the gap between lunch and dinner is going to be that little bit longer, then by all means do that. Something like mixed nuts, a little bit of dark chocolate, or some nuts and an apple, or it could be a little protein smoothie that you make, or a mini meal, some leftovers. That will support stable blood sugar. This is how you help your body to feel safe and nourished. You give it consistency. Go to sleep at the same time, wake up at the same time, have breakfast at the same time, lunch and dinner, you know, at roughly the same time, give or take. And then you fast for 12 hours overnight and you do the same thing all over again. That is where we can start to thrive. So if you've been hearing a lot about intermittent fasting and you're wondering whether you should be doing it, my general advice for women in perimenopause is you don't need extreme fasting to get the benefits. That simple 12-hour overnight fast combined with your protein breakfast, your other 2 balanced meals, is far more supportive for hormones, for energy, and your long-term metabolic health. And if you've tried longer fasting windows and you felt amazing at first, but you've eventually then sort of burned out, you're not imagining that, and you haven't failed at it, and you're not that person who just can't, you know, who it doesn't work for. Your body was just simply telling you that it needs more of a supportive rhythm. And this worked for a little while, but, you know, it's just not something sustainable, and it's not what you're thriving on. So I hope you found this helpful. Remember, if you'd like a little bit more personalized insight into what your body might need right now, you can take my free perimenopause quiz. I'll link to it in the show notes. So that looks at things like your nutrition, stress, sleep, hormones, gut health, and so on, and gives you a personalized result so that you can see which areas to focus on first out of all these different pillars. Thank you for listening. And any questions, as ever, drop them to me in an email, DM me on Instagram. Links for how to contact me will be in the show notes. And I will see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.